This is the Winchester Talking Newspaper for the week ending Friday, the 1st of March 2019. Hello and a very warm welcome to you for this week's edition of the Winchester and District Talking Newspaper, where we read extracts from the Hampshire Chronicle. I'm Peter Lydiard, your presenter for today, standing in for John Parker. Our editors this week are Anne Brew, Angela Ling, Carol Fraser and Jane Thomas. And I'm joined by our three readers this week, Jane Rutter.
Hello.
John Richards.
Hello.
And Margaret Boyden.
Hello.
Well, first, our regular notices. If you know someone who is citing and would like to receive our recordings, or if you have a problem with the recording you've received from us, please telephone Mary Davis, 01962 711 998. That's 01962 711 998. When you've finished listening to the recording, please put the memory stick in the yellow envelope, also putting your address label inside the envelope, and pop it back into the post. No stamp required. Just to remind you that you can use the buttons on your box to move to and from an item before it finishes, or back to any of the tracks if you want to listen to them again. And for those of you with computers or tablets, you might like to know that as well as using your memory stick in the box, you can also access the weekly recordings of the Chronicle through our website, www.winchestertalkingnews.com. You can either listen to it off the website, or you can download the recording to listen to it later. Or you could even plug your memory stick into the USB port of your computer. So on to the main headlines for this week. We have housing pledges seemed too good to be true, uni scrapped controversial event, and sale defended. So, Jane, could we have the first headline news, please?
Housing pledges seemed too good to be true. A senior opposition councillor has called on developers to fulfil their end of a deal over a large housing development. Liberal Democrat City and County Councillor Jackie Porter has hit out over the Eversley Gardens development off Loveton Lane in Kingsworthy, which was approved in September 2015. As part of the planning approval, developers Hab Housing, which was set up by Grand Designs TV presenter Kevin MacLeod, agreed Eversley Park would double in size with a new allotment, cycle rack, play area, orchard and car park. The land would then be given to Kingsworthy Parish Council to protect it from future development. Councillor Porter, who represents the village, said the Kingsworthy community chose this as their preferred site because the developer, Hab, offered so many community benefits. But to date, most of these have come to naught as work on the site seems to have stopped. It did all seem too good to be true. We were promised a running track, allotments, orchard, electric cars for the whole community to use, field paths linking with other footpaths, a Liberal Democrat newsletter, which is circulated to residents at the development, added, "It is disappointing in the extreme to see that work to complete the new Hab development at Eversley Gardens and the attached extension to the park has paused once again. The development is stuck in a financial dispute between Hab Land and Hab Housing." However, the newsletter does give some cause for hope. It says councillors have been told by a representative of Hab Housing that they hope that the promised community facilities would materialise as soon as the financial difficulties have been addressed. The Chronicle understands a group of residents living in the development are working to get progress from Hab Housing, but declined to comment ahead of a meeting with the firm. However, a spokesman for Hab said, "Hab Housing is aware that completion of the community amenities is outstanding at present. Hab Land, the funders of the development, and separate commercial entity to Hab Housing, are the funders of the development. Hab Housing is continuing to lobby the funders to complete the works and working with them to find solutions to complete the site. Hab Housing is also continuing to keep the local residents informed of developments." As previously reported, the scheme was hailed as an environmentally friendly development, with 20 of the 50 homes being affordable. The development was opened in spring 2017 by then-Mayor Councillor Jane Rutter and Kevin MacLeod. Mr MacLeod said of the event, "You can't whip people into being green, but you can give them lower carbon homes that use less energy and conserve water. But as well as that, there will be a whole myriad of wildlife on this site." And there's a photograph of a lovely green area with the new homes in the background, but it's all fenced off with a big danger keep out sign.
Thank you, Jane, for reading that bit about yourself.
It's always amusing.
It is. John, please.
Yes, uni scraps controversial event. Winchester University has scrapped a talk by the leader of the Justice for Men and Boys Party after more than 700 people signed a petition against it. The talk, entitled Equal Rights for Men and Women, had been due to take place tomorrow, that's today obviously, but news of the event sparked an online backlash, with some asking why the leader, Mike Buchanan, was being given a platform. Mr. Buchanan's 2015 party manifesto says it would fight for justice for men and boys as, quote, "the British state has become ever more hostile towards men and boys," unquote. It adds, "there are no areas in which the state disadvantages women and girls." Responding to news of the event, Holly Kybert Smith tweeted the university to say, "Is this the mindset you want your students to be listening to and learning from? There are a number of young women living on your campus whose safety could be endangered by this man's ideas." A university spokesman said, "The university and a significant number of students and staff had concerns. Like all universities, Winchester values intellectual freedom and free speech. However, events should be balanced and provide space for healthy challenge and debate."
Thank you, John. Margaret, please.
Sale defended. The city councillor at the centre of a property deal row has hit back in a letter to the Chronicle. It comes after details of negotiations between opposition councillor Kim Gottlieb and Winchester City Council for the sale of the St Clement's Surgery building at Tanner Street, a key site for the Central Winchester Regeneration Project, otherwise known as Silver Hill 2, were revealed last week. The report set out how agents acting on behalf of Councillor Gottlieb had been seeking a sale price of between £2 to £3 million, despite Councillor Gottlieb saying he would not seek profit for the building and would set up a civic trust for it, which has not happened. Councillor Gottlieb last week maintained he would not be profiting from the sale. In his letter, Councillor Gottlieb added, "I bought the site in November 2016 to avert a revival of the Henderson scheme and to prevent the St Clement's practice being evicted with nowhere to go. During the previous year, both events were distinct possibilities. I also wanted to keep the site within the council family. I have received numerous inquiries and some offers for the site and could have sold it for a great deal more than is provisionally agreed with the council. In any event, I will remain deeply in the red, and the suggestion that I have profited is as unkind as it is misguided."
Thank you, Margaret. And you'll find that, excuse me, that there is a letter from Kim Gottlieb in the letters section when we come to that. Right, a quick rundown of what follows. We start with the death notices. Then we have Christian comment, followed by letters to the editor, Chronicle comment, Joanna Lewis's column, Belgarum, historical items, what's on, and lighting up times. Right, we start off with the death notices. Excuse me. Appleton, William Appleton, known as Will, a respected local builder, 20th of February, aged 66.
Bidwell, Michael Shelford Bidwell, died on the 15th of February, aged 80.
Brock, Elizabeth Brock, née Osmond, died peacefully at home 16th of February, age 76.
Faithful, Kenneth Faithful, no date or age given for his death.
Farmer, June Lillian Farmer, peacefully in hospital, 16th of February, aged 88.
Float, Thomas Sidney Float, 16th of February, aged 91.
Hughes, Iris Margaret Hughes, née Byers, peacefully at the Dower House, aged 92.
Knight, June Dorothy Knight, 12th of February.
Mantle, Joan Mantle, née Clough, peacefully in the Royal Hampshire County Hospital, 16th of February, aged 89.
Osborne, Henry Osborne, known as Tony, died on the 15th of February, aged 94.
Rogers, Brenda Marie Rogers, peacefully at home, 14th of February, aged 79.
Sacri, Brian Rodney Sacri, peacefully on the 7th of February, aged 88.
Scott, Violet Scott, known as Vi, peacefully, 10th of February, aged 90.
Smith, Victor George Smith, died after a long battle with Alzheimer's on the 18th of February, aged 86.
Stevens, Joan Mary Stevens, née Curtis, 11th of February in St Catherine's Care Home, aged 81.
Thorne, William Henry Thorne, known as Willie or Bill, 22nd of February in Australia.
Williams, Ronald Norman Williams, peacefully in the Royal Hampshire County Hospital, aged 87.
And finally, Wilson, Gillian Wilson, known as Jill, peacefully on the 18th of February, aged 84.
Thank you. Now back to Jane again, please, for Christian comment.
This Christian comment is from the Reverend Philip Crinks, who's the priest in charge of St Faith's Parish in Winchester, and it's titled Lent, the Time of Reconciliation. Lent begins on Wednesday. We can already feel the springtime lengthening of days which heralds it, and from which it takes its English name. In Latin, it was called Quadragesima, the 40 days. As Jesus prepared himself for his time of suffering and death, he spent 40 days alone in wilderness areas. He separated himself from company and comfort to test himself and build the strength which comes from self-denial. Jesus' time of trial was vividly understood by early Christians as focused on three great spiritual conflicts between Jesus and satanic temptation. These were the temptation to take power over nations, the temptation to take power over nature, and the temptation to grant a central place to the powers of darkness. All these Jesus resisted. He remained always united with his Father and reconciled in fulfilling his Father's will. His will was that his followers might be completely united as he and his Father were united. But as we know, we often fall short of God's will for us. We are often divided in our own hearts and among ourselves. Lent provides us with an opportunity to reconcile with ourselves, with our God, and with each other. Reconciliation is the theme we are taking for our Sunday sermons at St. Cross during Lent, and reconciliation is also the theme of the book by Maratha Swami, which the Archbishop of Canterbury has chosen as his Lent book this year. Reconciliation has many aspects. Divisions between people must find eventual reconciliation if peace and justice are to grow and be sustained. That is true between nations and between groups and communities within our nation and indeed within our cities. It is also true of divisions between individuals in a community, institution or household. Efforts towards these kinds of reconciliation depend on resolving the divisions in our own hearts. We need to wrestle with the temptation to grab power in unhealthy ways. Instead, we can reconcile ourselves to work only in the power of the Holy Spirit. We need to wrestle with the temptation to abuse our powers over nature to gain more and more material wealth. Instead, we can reconcile ourselves to live in ways which crown rather than deface God's creation. We need to wrestle with the temptation to grant a central place in our lives to those things which harm us. Instead, we can reconcile ourselves to the right relationship with God as his children and explore the humility, openness, and self-control which that implies. Taking something up for Lent, something which feeds us spiritually, can help. So even can denying ourselves something which does the reverse. God of forgiveness and hope, you sent your Son, our Saviour, Jesus Christ, to reconcile us to each other and to you. Give us grace to discipline ourselves, to work for the healing of the wounds of the past, and to build up your kingdom of peace, justice and compassion, through the same Jesus Christ, our Lord.
Thank you, Jane. Excuse me. Now we move on to letters to the editor. There are a total of 18 letters this week, so we'll try to rattle through them at a reasonable pace. For your information, the letters section of the Hampshire Chronicle now runs to 4 pages, so clearly Winchester residents have a lot to say for themselves. And later on, you'll be relieved to hear that we have 5 letters about Brexit and the suggested second referendum. Hooray, I hear you cry. Anyway, we are working Jane very hard this morning because we start with her with the first letter, please.
And this is a letter about the St Clement's surgery from my new BFF, Councillor Kim Gottlieb.
BFF?
Best friend forever. She's a great guy. Sir, as much as I love the Chronicle, the story in last week's edition, February the 21st, regarding my proposed sale of the St Clement's surgery to the City Council, firmly grasps the wrong end of the stick. I bought the site in November 2016 to avert a revival of the Henderson scheme and to prevent the St Clement's practice being evicted with nowhere to go. During the previous year, both events were distinct possibilities. I also wanted to keep the site within the council family, as after a decade of negotiations with the council, the then owners had put the property on the open market. I've received numerous inquiries and some offers for the site and could have sold it for a great deal more than is provisionally agreed with the council. The Chronicle was fed selective information and didn't report the price actually agreed, but it would result in my recovering only the cost of my purchase and some legal fees spent on related issues with the council. In any event, I will remain deeply in the red, and the suggestion that I have profiteered is as unkind as it is misguided. I put my house on the line to pursue the judicial review, and I've been paying for trying to do the right thing ever since. I simply wanted to stop a development which even the council now accepts would have damaged the city. It was also the case that the High Court found that the council had acted unlawfully, but it seems it has never reconciled itself with that fact. My aspiration has always been that the regeneration of the city centre should be heritage-led. Instead of selling off the site for commercial development, the council should retain ownership and develop it chiefly for civic-minded uses. The adoption of the supplementary planning document represents significant progress, though there is still a long way to go to see how it is translated into actual development proposals. The council's acquisition of St Clement's is critical to the site assembly and future development of Silver Hill, and it would be a great shame if that endeavour was again delayed by further political intrigues. And that's Councillor Kim Gottlieb from East Stratton.
Thank you, Jane. John, please.
This next letter, which doesn't have a title, is from Karen Barrett. Sir, it might have been accurate to describe Kim Gottlieb as rebel councillor when he challenged his Tory colleagues' incompetence over the Silver Hill project. It might have been reasonable to describe him as such when he left his party to become independent. Today, however, as a member of the Lib Dems, he is back in the two-party establishment which controls Winchester. A straw poll I conducted recently led me to the conclusion that many people either don't know who currently runs the City Council or don't care because they see little difference between the two. It is not a happy situation. members of the electorate are stuck in tactical voting mode to ensure their own least worst option. But Winchester is in desperate need of a bit more diversity. Boundary changes saw the abolition of the St John and All Saints ward, which returned Labour members. It's virtually impossible to get elected as an independent, and minority parties struggle. In the meantime, we're treated to constant slanging matches between the Conservatives and Lib Dems. It's impossible to know the rights and wrongs or ins and outs of the latest controversy regarding the St Clement's surgery. What is certain, however, is that whether we accept Councillor Gottlieb's assessment of the gutless, anonymous lowlife who gave the story to your paper or not, this is all about party politics rather than any desire for increased transparency when it comes to Winchester City Council's financial affairs. That's from Karen Barrett, Byron Avenue, Full Flood, Winchester.
Well, this is another letter that relates to Kim Gottlieb, and this is from Michael Hall, headed Let's Thank Kim. So, I was surprised by the revelations in the Hampshire Chronicle concerning Councillor Kim Gottlieb and the proposed sale of St Clement's surgery back to the City Council. Should it come as a surprise to anyone that a property in central Winchester in a prime location has increased in value? Should it come as a surprise that the purchase and sale of property incurs considerable fees and taxes? I suggest no to both. As Councillor Gottlieb himself says, he made no financial gain on the sale. Does this not point to how silly this political spat has become? This certainly handily deflects from the fact that there is still a car park at the end of Upper Brook Street and not a new surgery. Perhaps the council may wish to reflect on that. We've been waiting long enough for a replacement for its tired facilities. Time and time again, the City Council has proven itself incapable of making the right decision, or at times a decision at all. Look at the protracted redevelopments of Station Approach, the River Park Leisure Centre, a decent transport policy, let alone the complexities of Silver Hill. Councillor Gottlieb should be thanked for standing up to those in Cabinet and saving the council from itself on more than one occasion. Everything else is just politics, and we know the current state of that around here. Thank you very much. Michael Hall, North Walls, Winchester.
Thank you, Margaret. I wish you could have seen Councillor Jane Rutter's face during the reading of those letters. It was an entertainment in itself. Now, Jane, the next letter, please.
I shouldn't be so transparent. Olders reply, and this is a letter from Paul Wing, who lives in Kingsworthy. Sir, Roger Mallin, Chronicle Letters, February the 21st, states, perhaps there should be another referendum, but please put an age limit of 60. It's not an issue for the old, unless it has the potential that cuts their pensions. On the assumption that this man is being serious, why does he stop with us oldies? Perhaps he should also limit the vote to only those who are in work, those who voted to remain, and those who have no real knowledge of the free world. What about those suffering from mental health problems? Does he not think that they too must also lose their vote? This way he'd get the result he wants. To deny a critical vote to anyone over 60, who may have another 30 years plus left on this planet, is verging on dictatorship. Mr. Mallin clearly lives in a very insular world and has no conception of what those over 60 may have done for his country. His suggestion would include a great number of working people and service personnel who fought for his country. Could he also explain how practically an elected government could work, knowing that any decision made within the EU was not voted for by a substantial minority of the population? Perhaps he also considered holiday camps for those over 70 and euthanasia for those over 80? Mr. Mallin, please say your proposal was done tongue-in-cheek. Paul Wing, Mortimer Close, Kingsworthy.
Thank you, Jane. John, please.
Yes, this is also in response to this famous Mr. Mallin. It's from Diana Kirkby. Sir, I really must take Roger Mallin to task over his letter in last week's edition, Chronicle, February 21st. Firstly, for the blatant ageism displayed at the end, an attitude as unacceptable these days as racism or sexism. Secondly, for perpetuating the myth that all older people voted to leave, perhaps dreaming of a return to a non-existent empire. I have a wide circle of acquaintances, ranging in age up to the mid and late 80s, and I don't know anyone who voted to leave. That's from Diana Kirkby, Nations Hill, Kingsworthy.
Thank you, John. Margaret?
And yes, there's yet another letter that refers to Mr. Mallin's letter of February the 21st from Diana Ashcroft. Sir, I had a propaganda, or perhaps a butcher's hook, at the letter from Roger Mallin and found much sense in it, apart from the last paragraph where Mr. Mallin seeks to disenfranchise me. Until June 2016, I had thought that by and large society, health, equality, tolerance had improved during my lifetime. Not steadily, granted, but in fits and starts. And being in Europe has been a privilege. The prospect of old age in post-Brexit Britain does not appeal, so please let me cast my over-60s people's vote. It is an issue for young and old alike, and that's my view in a lot fewer than 350 words. Diana Ashcross, West Street, Alsford.
Margaret Jane?
This is another Brexit-related letter. The people voted, from Tim Lowry. Sir, it has been said before, but the call for a people's vote at the recent demonstration in Winchester is irrelevant. We have already had one, and it was called the referendum. The pros and cons of Brexit were clearly explained in the government circular provided to every home before that vote. Is it the intention that we follow the normal EU response of continuous re-voting until ill-informed people such as myself change our mind? Or is it simply a case of not respecting democracy and the will of the majority? Tim Lowry, Newton Stacey, Stockbridge.
John?
Una Stevens has a letter about what she calls brine and Brexit. Sir, read Steve Brine's letter from Winchester, Chronicle, February the 21st. It is novel for me to be in agreement with our MP, but I do share his abhorrence of hate mail. Notwithstanding, even he must realise that it's a sign of weakness to bolster one's arguments by referring to those in high office, most particularly when their words have been degraded to a robotic mantra of being clear, when clarity is exactly what our nation does not have at this critical point in the Brexit proceedings. I shudder that Steve dared to use the expression, truth is, when the British people has been subjected to repeated lies, distortions and fake news. No retribution for the perpetrators, no more than for those who have peddled absurdly optimistic promises, such as 63 trade deals signed off, seconds after the UK leaves the EU, a deal with a shipping company with no ferries, to name but two, starkly calling into question the judgment of those who have so blatantly deceived us, but in whom the PM still has full confidence. He talks about the national interest, but fails to give any detail of what it consists, omitting to mention that Conservative MPs cannot agree a consensus. Hollow, empty words, reminiscent of what the iconoclastic Brexiteers do with such extreme ease, namely, criticise and carp, but with absolutely no solutions. Given Mr. Brine's objection to the way he has been treated by hate mail, I cannot comprehend why he stoops to such abject criticism of those MPs who have demonstrated the courage and integrity that is so lacking in recent political history with his inflammatory language and triple allusions to fire. Are Tusk's and Dante's words resounding? That's from Una Stevens, Cliff Way, Compton.
Thank you, John. Margaret, please.
There's a letter from Brian Porter, car park needed. Sir, as a congregation member of St. Swithin's Church, Headbourne Worthy, for over 40 years, I sincerely believe that for the church to continue to thrive in the future, it needs to have its own dedicated car park on the same side of the road as the church. At present, it depends on the goodwill of a local resident for cars to park on a Sunday morning opposite the church on the grass verge of his long drive, and this gets badly churned up during the winter months. Crucially, his land is also a site of important scientific interest. More importantly, those attending church, particularly the elderly, have to cross a very busy road. The plan is for a 25-space car park that would be extensively landscaped and screened from the sublime setting of the 1,000-year-old Saxon church. The car park would be used regularly for Sunday services. The maximum number of spaces would be needed for the occasional wedding and funeral, and for major services, e.g. Easter and Christmas, as well as church-related community events, including fundraising. For much of the time, the car park would have only one or two cars in it, if any, and the tranquil setting of the church would be preserved for visitors to enjoy its interior and famous rood in the vestry. Historic England noted the intrusive nature of the car park, but noted it would be well screened, and tellingly, it concluded that any problems would be outweighed by the broader heritage benefit of supporting the sustainability of the church as a place of worship and other community activities. Whilst I understand that Natural England did have some concerns, the PCC and its team have worked very closely to ensure that the environment is and will be protected during construction and thereafter, allowing Natural England to confirm that it did not wish to make any further comments. Brian Porter, Park Close, Winchester.
Thank you, Margaret. Jane?
This is a letter about Boomtown. Sir, Boomtown is one piece of a much larger jigsaw puzzle, which, in total, defines the future of Matterley Estate. Whilst Boomtown is contentious, it masks what is actually being applied for, i.e. to convert over 1,000 acres of agricultural land within the South Downs National Park to mixed farming, which includes festivals and events. Consent leaves the door open for other activities, not yet specified, on a site with capacity for 200,000. The proposal is defined in planning terms as major development within a national park and is contrary to government policy. As such, it requires an environmental statement and an environmental impact assessment and should be subject to the highest level of scrutiny in the country. SDNPA persists in not demanding these documents. Why? SDNPA officers are employed as guardians of our national park and are failing in their duty of care. Had they insisted on an ES and EIA, the application would undoubtedly fail the tests applied and be refused. Instead, SDNPA are evaluating it under a screening option, thus avoiding the conditions above. This is the lowest category of planning control allowable and legally cannot be applied to a major development. Instead, planning officers are taking a view on the implications without even the most rudimentary testing against the NPPF and local planning policies. Unbelievable. The application is in perpetuity, forever. Mr. Bruce's attempts to pour oil on troubled waters are less than convincing. He states, "Nothing can happen here without my say-so," and that the estate is large enough for bigger events, potentially 200,000. He goes on to say that he does not think that the organisers of Boomtown want to get that big. Really? How big then? I wish Mr. Bruce a long and healthy life, but he is not immortal. The consent continues after his demise. The new owners may take a different view on expansion, as may events promoters in years to come. The most concerning aspect is that SDNPA appears willing to set a precedent for activities within all national parks and should be interrogated by the government for arriving at such a decision. And that's Graham Tarbuck, Orchard View, Kilmerston in Ulsford.
Thank you, Jane. John.
Gorgeous ivy, writes Ooh. Anne Davis. Sir, well done, Ali Kefford. I loved your wonderful letter, Read the Ivy, Chronicle February 21st. It was grizzling and with style. Whatever that might be. Please don't give up on that gorgeous restaurant. The staff lunchtime.
Oh, are it's fabulous. About a restaurant.
The staff lunchtime are fabulous. Whether that's their service or to eat, I don't know. Anyway, that's from Anne Davis, Forge Close, King Somborne, Stockbridge.
Thank you, Margaret.
The letter from Keith Webb, Sexism Probe. Sir, online this morning I read that 5 police officers have been suspended and 11 placed on restricted duties as they were caught making sexist or homophobic remarks by hidden security cameras and microphones installed at Hampshire's new investigation centre in Basingstoke. It is Big Brother and political correctness gone mad that someone made the decision to install such equipment at the cost of probably hundreds of thousands of pounds and to incur the additional costs of monitoring the system 24 hours a day. How many policemen or policewomen who might otherwise be put out on the beat does this tie up? Suspending 16 officers, presumably, as always, on full pay, further reduces the number on duty, and this at a time when the force claims to be massively underfunded. Not surprisingly, I became apoplectic with rage at the complete waste of money and resources, as well as the damage that this must be doing to police morale and recruitment. Can it be long before those who got their way and installed the hidden cameras and microphones seek to have them installed in our homes as well? With my own lifelong views, I would be arrested within days, and I venture to suggest so too would the vast majority of our male workforce, unless they are liberal leftist Guardian readers. We must be told who made the decision to install the secret monitoring equipment and how much it cost. In addition, we need to know how many staff are tied up overseeing it and what this costs too. My inclination is to withhold some of my rates as a result, and many others may feel the same. Keith Webb, Quarry Road, Winchester.
Jane, please.
This is a lovely brief letter from Elizabeth Proudman. Austin, thanks. Sir, please may I use your columns to express publicly my thanks to the Dean and Chapter for abandoning their plan for a statue of Jane Austen in the Cathedral Close, Chronicle, February 21st. It's very good to know that when many ordinary townspeople express their view, as happened on this occasion, their voices are heard. And that's Elizabeth Proudman, St John Street in Winchester.
Thank you, Jane. John?
Wrong name, says Phil Yates, one of our regular correspondents. Yes. Sir, I entirely agree with Councillor Jan Warwick regarding measures to reduce the use of disposal of plastic drinking bottles, and applaud the scheme underway relating to usable branded cups at the 1871 Cafe at the Guildhall, Chronicle, February 21st, which brings me to that name. Quite often people ask me, why 1871? The answer is that the Gothic-styled Guildhall was built between 1871 and 1873 by Southampton-based builders John Bull and Sons at the cost of £20,000. For some years, the cafe area was a lecture room known as the Saxon Suite, so named because of the Saxon connections in that area. May I suggest that when a name has been chosen for the Silver Hill redevelopment area, which will have a Saxon flavour, that the cafe be renamed Saxon Cafe, which should have been the name in the first place. That's from Phil Yates, Tower Street, Winchester.
My vote for that.
Thank you, Margaret.
This is a letter from Nick Dennis, and I do hope you get the point of this letter. It's entitled Opportunity. Sir, I notice that there is a temporary sign placed just past the entrance to the South Park and Ride directing motor traffic to the Discovery Centre for the current Blackadder exhibition. A missed opportunity? Nick Dennis, Worthy Lane, Hyde, Winchester.
Thank you.
I'm sure this next letter will resonate with many of our listeners. Cycle Vision. Sir, I refer to Nick Ray's second letter, Chronicle, February the 14th, in which he repeats his objections to moving cycle racks as part of the St. Maurice Covert refurbishment. If the racks are retained in a space through which pedestrians are to be encouraged to pass, they will continue to present a hazard to those with mobility problems, particularly the visually impaired, of whom I am one. I assume that Mr. Ray, as a cyclist, has good sight and therefore has never grazed his shin on a pedal, bruised his arm on a handlebar, or tripped over a wheel protruding from a parked cycle. I cannot believe that Mr. Ray regards the inconvenience of walking for a few minutes from Colebrook Street to his favourite coffee shop as a greater hardship than that experienced by those with disabilities when negotiating the busy streets of Winchester every day. Also, I am intrigued as to how his letter implies Mr. Ray is able to carry goods on his cycle, which would otherwise be delivered in an Amazon van. I think there need be no fear of Winchester City Council's not taking the importance of cycling seriously. Indeed, it is a truth universally acknowledged that cycling is beneficial to health and the environment. And that letter's from Keith Hatter, who's the chairman of Winchester Area Access for All in Arthur Road, Hyde, Winchester.
Okay. John.
Oliver Gray writes about fake news. Sir, we are all familiar with the concept of fake news on the internet, but it's sad that it has started infiltrating the Chronicle's letters pages. A good example comes from your prolific contributor, Mr. Hargreaves. In last week's letter, he continues his habit of making unfounded statements as if they are the truth. He claims that security for the recent Brexit march cost thousands of pounds, whereas your factual news story makes it clear that it was a total of £900. He also states that the Liberal Democrats organised the event. They didn't. And that the City Council had to foot the bill for all the security. In fact, the security was provided by the organisers. I know this because I was one of the volunteer stewards. Oliver Gray, Finch's Lane, Twyford.
Thank you, John. Margaret.
A letter from Derek Conway, Dirty Docks. Sirs. Sorry about that.
Careful how you say that.
Southampton has a pollution problem. It has good green spaces and relatively few high-rise buildings. Southampton has no heavy industry. It is shaped in a semicircle. The western side is the open Southampton Water and New Forest. The city centre air, which is on the edge of the semicircle, should be cleaner than average. Many cruise ships visit Southampton and thereby bring many jobs, maybe 6 ships at a time. On board are passengers and crew, maybe 6,000. These live in a steel box which can be closed against the weather for days on end. So everything required on board is powered by electricity, the air conditioning, water desalination, sewerage, the cooking, the storage of fresh food, the lighting, the machines, the list goes on. This power is required while the ship is berthed. The power requirement per passenger is far greater than for a resident of Southampton in his or her home. This power is generated on board using the ship's fuel. What is this fuel? When at sea, they burn very crude and dirty fuel. Is this the fuel they burn in Southampton docks? They have to use a cleaner fuel in some US ports. San Diego, USA, tried having electric hookups for ships. I don't know how successfully, but Southampton sometimes has 6 cruise ships calling in for just 12 hours. The generating capacity required on land to power these ships would be vast. Should the motorist be blamed and made to pay a congestion charge? Derek Conway, Portsmouth Road, Fisher's Pond, Corbin Common.
Thank you, Margaret. And that is the end of the letters section for the moment. I hope you agree with me that I personally find the letters section of the Hampshire Chronicle the more entertaining bits of the paper. So I hope you'll bear with us when we read them out. If you have an opinion or a subject that you'd like to air in the Hampshire Chronicle and have us read it out, you can contact them on 01962 860836. That is 01962 860836. or you can email them, news@hampshirechronicle.co.uk, or you can write to the editor at 5 Upper Brook Street, Winchester, SO23 8AL. Now we move on to Hampshire Chronicle editorial comment. John, please.
Yes, it's entitled The Real Importance of Free Speech. We report a late-breaking story on page 21 of this week's Chronicle. Hundreds of people have signed a petition calling on Winchester University to scrap a talk on campus by the leader of the Justice for Men and Boys Party. Just as the Chronicle went to press, the university did so. Mike Buchanan was due to give a talk entitled Equal Rights for Men and Women. I don't think that's right, actually. I think it's Equal Rights for Men and Boys, wasn't it?
I think so, yes.
Mr. Buchanan is a controversial figure and has been branded a misogynist and purveyor of hate speech. He holds ludicrous views on the place of women in society and claims, quote, the British state has become ever more hostile towards men and boys, although it's largely funded by men, unquote. The thing is, our society is based on the concept of free speech. It's a key foundation and should only be limited in a few instances, such as inciting racial hatred. The people criticising Mr. Buchanan and the university are exercising their right to free speech. Mr. Buchanan has that same right, even though his views may be appalling. That is the point of free speech. It protects everyone. Young people often forget this. They believe trying to bury such views is the answer. It is not. Mr. Buchanan's stupid ideas need to be in the public domain so they can be aired, analysed, debated, ridiculed and seen for the rubbish that they are.
Thank you, John. Now we move on to Joanna Lewis's column. Margaret, if you read this, please.
And it's entitled One Rape is One Too Many. Every woman who has ever got into a taxi alone and felt uneasy or been in a train compartment late at night and worriedly looked over their shoulder will have read the ordeal of a Winchester woman at the hands of rapist Ferrum Khan and likely thought, by the grace of God, that wasn't me. That's about every woman I know, including me. It doesn't make any difference what age you are, whether you are returning late from work or out on the town. We have all got into a cab at some point, and because of a look, an atmosphere, or a comment, we have quietly prayed we will get home safely. As the 33-year-old victim said in her court statement, I did as any young woman would. I went out with friends and I took a taxi home. Yet she is also not just any young woman. The policewoman leading the investigation, Joanne Parr Daniels, singled out her bravery in taking Khan to court despite her ongoing trauma. I hope that by making this courageous decision, witnessing the custodial sentence meted out to Khan, and being aware of the public's admiration of her, the victim's healing process will be boosted. Hopefully, too, her gutsy response and the support of the police will inspire other women to pursue justice if they are ever victim of such evil. Sexual assaults on women in taxicabs across the country go underreported, which makes this conviction hugely significant, not least for the details revealed so far. There are a number of extremely unsettling aspects to this horrible case. The first is the obvious misogyny of Khan. After raping his victim, who was so frightened she froze, he rang the police to complain there was a drunken woman in his cab and demanded, outraged, that they remove her. Second is the fact that Khan was in possession of a Wolverhampton taxicab licence. It took a local licensed taxi driver, Colin Smith, to point out to Winchester City Council that Wessex Cars was regularly employing drivers who didn't know the local area, weren't paying any local fees, and weren't subject to safety spot checks. This produced a letter from Winchester Council to Wolverhampton about possible implications. Meaning what exactly? No action against Wessex Cars was taken because it is not illegal. The City Council has insisted, using typically vague bureaucratic speak, it is enhancing safety measures. But questions remain. What are these safety measures and why were Wessex Cars doing this in the first place? It would be unfair if this case tarnished the reputation or resulted in retaliation against Muslim taxi drivers. But we expect taxi companies to employ drivers on the basis they will treat a woman travelling alone with respect and empathy. This is someone's daughter, mother or sister, and that they know the area. Wolverhampton's low pass mark for the latter was well known. Meanwhile, evidence suggests there might be a rise in cases such as Khan's nationally. It is in the public interest to know why. The suggestion that CCTV cameras in taxis will prevent what happened reoccurring fails to address the underlying issues. The rule should be you have to pass a knowledge test for the area you are working in. One rape is already one too many.
Thank you, Margaret. Well, Belgarum, as you probably know, gives us an alternative view of the news. So Jane and John are going to read a couple of items, please.
The first item is called Chicken Chain Campaign. And there's a photograph of a group of enthusiastic younger people outside and a new Southampton Nando's opening. Winchester is home to many of the staple high street food chains, such as McDonald's and Wagamama. But the city does not have a Nando's. When browsing social media, Belgarum discovered a student campaigning to change that. Over 230 out of the target 500 people has signed a petition to open one of the popular restaurants in Winchester. The appeal was posted online to change.org by an anonymous account. It reads, "As a student at the University of Winchester, I firmly believe that the city should be blessed with a Nando's restaurant." The official Nando's Facebook account has since responded to the campaigner saying, "It's not an area we were looking at, but we admire your persistence. Keep those fingers crossed. Hopefully we will hatch in Winch one day." Would you like to see a Nando's in Winchester? Send a letter to letters@hampshirechronicle.co.uk.
Hey, John.
Yes, this next piece is really a picture story, in fact. It's headlined, "A Diversion? Take your pick." And it's a photograph of two road signs. Just to put you in the picture, this is, if you imagine you're walking towards the high street along Southgate from the Southgate Street from the St Cross area. This is a photograph taken just before it gets to the traffic lights at the junction. There is a sign which says "diverted traffic" on the footpath, turning left, very clearly left. Five paces further on, there is a sign which says "diverted traffic" and it's signed "right," very clearly "right." And as Belgarum says, "We're sure that the traffic engineers or contractors who put these signs up are presumably for two different sets of diversions, or at least Belgarum hopes so. However, many road users will still have been baffled."
Right, too. Right, well, we move on to historical items, starting, Jane, please, 25 years ago, please.
25 years ago, Friday, March the 4th, 1994. A £10 million haul was set alight by bungling robbers in a security van hijack near Winchester on Tuesday evening. More than £1 million was destroyed by fire and smoke, as a masked gang used oxyacetylene cutting gear to break into the armoured van at a secluded copse near Crawley, 5 miles northwest of the city. But the two guards who were locked inside the smoke-logged vehicle took advantage of the confusion caused by the flames to drive off and raise the alarm. Meanwhile, the hijackers fled empty-handed. The shock of the robbery caused the driver to suffer a mild heart attack and he has been detained in hospital, where his condition was yesterday, Thursday, said to be stable. The drama started shortly after 5 p.m. as the Security Corps driver and guard were travelling from Southampton to the Midlands along the A34. As they approached the Three Maids Hill interchange, a caller on their mobile phone told them to follow a blue Ford Escort in front, or a device under the van would be detonated. The two vehicles turned off the dual carriageway and onto the B3420 road to Stockbridge. 2 miles on, they turned left onto a farm track leading to Crawley. Another mile on, they drove into a copse and stopped. 6 men wearing balaclavas then told the two Security Corps employees to get out of the van. They refused, so the gang started burning their way into the body of the vehicle.
Oh, good heavens, that's all I can say.
It's hair-raising, isn't it?
It is, yes, John.
Yes, this piece is from 50 years ago, Saturday, March the 1st, 1969. A group of officials representing German cities, states and unions on a brief visit to Britain as guests of IBM UK were received by the Mayor and Mayoress of Winchester, Councillor and Mrs. Stuart Green, at the Abbey House on Monday. In the course of the evening, C. Schultz Wolfgram, representing IBM Germany, presented their hosts with a pictorial map of North Germany and books about Germany. Expressing his gratitude to Councillor and Mrs. Green for their hospitality, he said that the aim of the group was to obtain a better understanding of both Winchester and IBM in the United Kingdom. He felt that it was not such a bad thing that the politicians didn't seem able to bring countries together. Their visit was proof that science was capable of performing that function.
100 years ago, Saturday, March the 1st, 1919. When the war in all its terrible fierceness was raging, thought could not be given to the share that was being borne by individual sections of the community. We realised it was a burden of sacrifice shared alike by all. A service in commemoration of London bell ringers was held at St Clementine's on Saturday, and similarly at Winchester, as the outcome of a suggestion on the part of the Dean and Chapter. Evensong at the Cathedral on Saturday was a service of thankful commemoration.
And 200 years ago, March the 1st, Monday, 1819... a subscription has been entered into for building a new chapel at Above Bar, Southampton, and very handsome sums have been given. The plan for widening the Church of St Mary has been suspended for 3 weeks, and it is the opinion of some that it will be totally laid aside owing to some opposition. Right, we just move on to some items which may be happening in the area which might be of interest to you. There is a concert at the City Art Gallery in Southampton that occurs on March the 16th, 8 o'clock in the evening. Tickets will be available from the City Art Gallery. And it is a concert which accompanies the Leonardo exhibition. Be complemented by a musical piece provided by Southern Voices, the Winchester-based Chamber Choir. Sorry about that. What else have we got for you? Oh, another one in Southampton. If you would like to join Radio DJ Stuart Marconi, there's a special talk that he's giving at the Nuffield Theatre this Sunday, so that will be Sunday the 3rd. In October 2016, he walked 300 miles from Jarrow to London, retracing the famous Jarrow Crusade 80 years on. So he'll be talking about that. What else have we got for you? On March the 6th, there's a talk, The Treasures of Dorset, a talk by Christopher Legrand to the National Trust Winchester Association following its AGM. That's 2:30 at the Bapsey Hall in the Guild Hall. There is another talk at, it's about Hampshire Swifts, Badger Farm Community Centre, on March the 13th, 7:30, an illustrated talk by Catherine Tate from Hampshire Swifts Association on these beautiful summer birds, which spend almost all of their life in the air but are now in dramatic decline. And finally, a concert. This is, oh, this might not get to you in time. This is Saturday, March the 2nd, so hopefully you'll hear about this in time. 7 p.m, the Boy Queristers of Winchester College will sing sacred and secular music in the Chapel of St. Cross, accompanied by Benjamin Cunningham, the college organist. Right, well, those were our regular features for this week. Thank you all. But before we move on to the general news, I know that many of you are eagerly awaiting the lighting up times. So this week, the sun will rise at about 6:50 a.m. and it will set about 5:45 p.m. Right, well, on to items of general news, starting with Jane, please.
Driver failed to spot biker at busy junction. The wife of the head of Stannah Stairlifts has been spared jail for killing a motorcyclist after she failed to stop her Land Rover Discovery at a dangerous junction. A court heard Andrea Stannah, 45, had dropped off her children at school and was returning home when she pulled across a dual carriageway. Failing to spot motorcyclist Stephen Rayner, the 4x4 ploughed straight into him, sending the 53-year-old civil engineer careering into a tree and a fence. The court heard a distraught Stannah, who is married to Nicholas Stannah, managing director of Stannah Stairlifts Limited, had to be dragged away from Mr. Rayner's prone body as she desperately tried to assist him. The father of two, a highly regarded structural engineer, died at the scene. Web designer Stannah, who attended court with her husband, admitted a charge of causing death by driving without due care and attention. It was heard Mr. Rayner's death was due to her inattention at the junction on the A31, less than a mile from her home in Ovington, and her failure to spot his motorcycle as she turned right. Prosecutor Kerry Richardson told Basingstoke Magistrates Court that witnesses driving on the carriageway in July last year braked to avoid Stannah's green 4x4 as it pulled out into the road and saw the bike collide with its front near side wing. One, named only as Mr. Good, had been driving a delivery truck which was overtaken by Mr. Rayner before he pulled back into the left lane. Mr. Richardson said, "The bike was cruising but certainly wasn't going fast. Mr. Good saw a green 4x4 in the middle of the two carriageways. He could see what was going to happen. The bike had nowhere to go." Mrs. Tailford East, who was driving a Vauxhall Corsa in the right-hand lane, said she had to brake heavily to avoid Stannah. In a statement read to the court, she said, "The 4x4 was travelling through the junction. As it came closer to the carriageway, I was aware it was not going to stop. I had to apply my brakes heavily. The 4x4 did not react to my presence. I knew if I did not brake, I would have hit the side of the car. I do not know if the driver knew I was there or not." Ms. Richardson added, "Not only did Mrs. Stannah miss the motorcycle in lane one, but two larger vehicles in lane two." Stannah's lawyer, Alex Stein, said, "The defendant accepts fully she made an error in assessing Mrs. Tailford East's speed. As Mrs. Tailford East is proceeding, the bike continues to be, rather tragically, hidden from view." Mr. Stein said his client was extremely remorseful. Sentencing Stannah to 8 weeks in jail suspended for 12 months and ordering her to pay £200, District Judge Tim Pattinson said, "I am left in no doubt that this is more serious than a case of momentary inattention."
Roadside Barbie. It was an unusual spot for a barbecue, the hard shoulder of the A34 dual carriageway. Winchester firefighters were alerted to reports of smoke on the road near Three Maids Hill and arrived to discover a family cooking a meal. Watch manager Mark Compton said the incident happened last Thursday afternoon. He said, "It's not the safest place to have a barbecue. They were foreign from the Middle East. We thought at first that they'd broken down, but they were cooking a proper meal with kebabs and a whole chicken." It would be worth highlighting the importance of only stopping in a lay-by. "They put us at risk as we nearly got hit by HGVs. We gave them safety advice and they moved their car off the highway, but they continued to have their picnic in the hedgerows."
Right. Dementia sufferers need more support. A leading Hampshire nurse says younger people who develop dementia are falling into a void, with little or no access to long-term specialist support. Dementia expert Fiona Shaban, who works at the University Hospital Southampton NHS Foundation Trust, claims the lack of provision is having a devastating impact on families across the country. She has spoken out after being appointed the UK's first dedicated clinical coordinator for patients living with younger onset brain disorders. "About 5% of people with Alzheimer's disease, the most common form of dementia, are aged under 65 years of age. The condition can affect people in their early 40s or even late 30s, and is often more aggressive than dementia in the elderly." Ms. Shaban said, "Diagnosing dementia in younger people is a challenge in itself, as symptoms are often attributed initially to stress or depression. But once a diagnosis has been made, the services these patients then require either don't exist or are fragmented. We're currently in a situation where older people's mental health services are focused on those aged 65 and over, while adult mental health services don't necessarily have the specific skills and experience to meet the needs and complexities of dementia in younger people. That leaves us with a gaping void which those with younger onset dementia are falling into, and it is devastating families nationwide. More than 40,000 people in the UK have been diagnosed with younger onset dementia. Ms. Shaban, who is based at Southampton General Hospital, said the majority were squeezed into more mainstream services which may lack the expertise or experience in managing the condition. She added, "Someone with younger onset dementia might only be in their 40s with an active life, young children and a full-time job. A diagnosis will not only be unexpected but completely life-changing for the patient and their family, and it's essential they have ongoing support to help them adapt and find specialist services. Ms. Shaban provides a range of continuous support, including home visits. Having a fully trained specialist nurse in this role can be a real lifeline to patients and their families at the most difficult times," she said.
New ideas for the station approach redevelopment. Civic chiefs and architects are getting close to formally applying for permission for one of the biggest redevelopment schemes in Winchester's history. The latest plans for the Carfax station approach were unveiled at a public exhibition on Saturday and Tuesday at the old registry office next to the railway station. A planning application for outlay permission is expected at the end of March. This is the City Council's second attempt to redevelop the Carfax site after a previous scheme was scuppered in 2016. City Councillors killed it off because they considered its bulk and height too great for Winchester. Architects Leif Schutz Davidson at Sandylands have developed a scheme for offices with better public access through the site and revamped public transport hub. Ian Cherry, head of the programme at the City Council, said he believed the scheme was needed for the city and many people agreed. Speaking at the exhibition on Saturday, Mr. Cherry said, "I've just spoken to a woman who said we need it. It will bring 1,000 jobs. Winchester has to move on, else it will stagnate." Mr. Cherry said the new proposal is less intrusive. It is 4 or 5 stories and not 7. The parking will be underground. There are currently 223 parking spaces on the site. There will be 130. This is an outline application, so things like the details and the materials can be changed. Getting permission will enable the council to seriously attract tenants for the offices, he said. The two exhibitions attracted more than 200 people. The council stresses that the designs are concepts and can be changed. Feedback on the proposals was collected and will be considered when preparing an outline planning application, due to be submitted before the end of March. Councillor Steve Miller, chairman of the Camerdat Station Approach Committee, said, "It was great to see so many residents, visitors and commuters at the information sessions and to share the latest updates with them. The feedback we received after the sessions will be collated and published in a report next month and will be useful in guiding this project through the next steps. I would like to thank everyone for taking the time to share their views with us." The Station Approach project is set to bring 140,000 square feet of Grade A office space, along with a further 17,000 square feet of supporting retail, cafe and restaurant space to Winchester, and will provide an £81 million boost to the local economy. The Council's Overview and Scrutiny Committee will discuss the project at their meeting on Wednesday, March the 20th, with the Council Station Approach Cabinet expected to approve the concept designs and confirm the submission of an outline planning application for the Carfax site by the end of March.
Pub crowned country's best. A pub which stood derelict and empty just 4 years ago has been crowned the country's best by a leading industry organisation. The Wanston Arms, in Sutton Scotney near Winchester, which in fact is walking distance from where I am reading this in the studio at the moment, yeah. And it's probably where we'll go when we finish. The Wanston Arms will be presented with the accolade today after being named Camera's National Pub of the Year 2018. Since reopening the pub, landlord Matt Todd has focused on benefiting the community, making it an important asset for residents as well as a successful business. Alongside a selection of carefully kept cask ales and a gin bar with 180 varieties,
what?
The Wanston Arms boasts a range of pop-up foodie nights and social events as well as fundraising. To date, it has raised more than £25,000, and each month it hosts a pop-up cafe, which has raised over £7,000 for local causes. Mr. Todd said, "I'm overwhelmed that our little pub, which had been handed a death sentence 4 years ago, has now been named the very best in the country. I have strived to recreate the kind of wet pub I went to in the 1970s with my dad when I was a young boy in the north of England. The support from the local community and beyond has been overwhelming, helping to propel us forwards despite these testing times." Winchester MP Steve Brine added, "The pub trade isn't easy these days, to put it mildly. In this context, it's even more impressive what Matt Todd and the team have achieved. The fact that he's done so while staying so true to the values of real ale, a decent local pint and community is just great." Ben Wilkinson, National Pub of the Year coordinator, said, "Pubs like the Wanston Arms highlight what communities stand to lose if their local pub closes, something being experienced in all too many places."
Airport drone exclusion zones to be extended. New legislation to extend the non-fly zone for drones around airports will come into force next month, the Department for Transport has announced. The gadgets will be banned from being flown within 5 kilometres of airports, including Southampton, from March the 13th. Under current laws, only 1 kilometre restriction is in place. The government has also partnered with a major retailer to reduce drone misuse. Jessops has pledged to tell customers about the latest rules around flying drones. Concern about their misuse has grown after sightings of the devices caused flights to be grounded over 36 hours at Gatwick Airport last Christmas. Transport Secretary Chris Grayling said, Anyone flying their drone within the vicinity of an airport should know they are not only acting irresponsibly, but criminally, and could face imprisonment. There were 125 near misses between drones and aircraft reported in 2018, up 34% on the total of 93 during the previous year. Just 6 incidents were recorded in 2014. Ian Savage, head of retail and academy training at Jessup, said, Along with the pleasure drones bring comes a responsibility for the user to ensure they are flying their drone safely and legally. As one of the leading drone retailers, Jessup is committed to ensuring it communicates the new law to all its customers. The government is working on a new drones bill which will give police officers powers to stop and search people suspected of using drones maliciously above 400 feet or within 5 kilometres of an airport. It will also give forces the power to access electronic data stored on a drone with a warrant.
This next article is about the proposed statue of Jane Austen at the cathedral. And there's a photograph, a computer-generated image, in fact, of what the statue would have looked like. A rather Amazonian Jane standing in a breeze, clearly, with her dress swept behind her and her curves clearly on show. Not a very supported suggestion from the populace. And the article reads, "A prominent critic of plans to erect a statue of Jane Austen within the grounds of Winchester Cathedral has branded the saga a fiasco after the plans were scrapped. Lady Elizabeth Loder, who was one of those publicly criticising the bid in the letter pages of the Chronicle, said it was unwelcome and denigrated because it did not represent anyone's idea of Jane Austen. A spokesman for Winchester Cathedral confirmed the plans had been scrapped last week following a barrage of criticism. The spokesman said, "We have listened carefully and alongside support and enthusiasm for the project, we have also been fully aware of serious concerns expressed regarding the type of sculpture, the location and the timing of this significant commission. As a result of this listening, Chapter has decided, with regret, not to go ahead with this concept. There are other priorities within the cathedral and city that need to be the focus of attention and energy at this time." Responding to the news, Lady Loder said, "The cost of £250,000 was an insult when funding for essential projects was being cut. Winchester Cathedral is in our hearts. Its part of this fiasco will soon be forgotten." Keith Lehman, chairman of the City of Winchester Trust, which expressed concerns over the statue, added, "We felt it was a good decision not to go ahead. We just don't think it was handled particularly well." Elizabeth Proudman of St John Street was also among those criticising the scheme, but has thanked the cathedral for listening to people's views. She said, "It is very good to know that when many ordinary townspeople express their view, as happened on this occasion, their voices are heard." As previously reported, the project had been pledged financial backing from Winchester City Council and Hampshire County Council, who had both offered to put £25,000 into the project. Following the move, Hampshire County Council confirmed it had not given the project any money.
Hotel opening. The new hotel, currently under construction in Winchester High Street, is set to open this autumn, according to the operators. Planners approved the designs for the new Travelodge last April. The go-ahead followed changes to the scheme after criticism from several people and organisations, as well as the City Council's urban design officer. The 62-bed hotel, once complete, is taking over the vacant Next store, which was demolished before construction work began on the new hotel.
Flyaway parrot returns. A Winchester resident has been reunited with her pet parrot after it escaped when flying for the first time. The African grey, Marley, had been in the garden of her family's home in Stanmore before taking to the sky on February the 24th. Alison Batchelor was left dumbstruck when her bird took off, explaining that she had never flown before. She said, "We were out back on Sunday afternoon, and just as I was about to go back inside at around 1:30 p.m. with Marley, she flew off. That was the first time she's been able to do it, and I didn't know what to do." Alison, who bought the parrot as a hatchling in 2017, told the Chronicle that she saw Marley later in the day, but accidentally frightened her away. She said, "I was driving around looking at her for her for the rest of the day, and I saw a group of people huddled around a wall. They were looking at Marley, who was just perched there. But stupidly, I let the excitement get the better of me and beeped my horn. She flew off again, and I broke down in tears. I couldn't help thinking that I'd never see her again." After posting several statements to social media platforms, she received a message from Susie Wilmot at around 8 a.m. on February the 26th, saying that Marley was in a tree near St. Catherine's Hill. Alison said she shot straight there and used a banana to lure her down, adding it, "It was such a relief. I'd not been sleeping right, and I was so happy that luckily I'd got my parrot back. She's absolutely knackered now and hasn't stopped sleeping." Marley has already developed a number of vocal talents. She can whistle the theme tune to Star Wars and has been trained to tell the family dog, Holly, to get down when she jumps up. And there's a lovely picture of Marley, lovely grey parrot.
Thank you, Jane, please.
Back down to earth, or back down to the sea, I think, in this case. Marine unit sails into secure future. Hampshire's Coastal Crime Fighting Service has seen its future secured, but is set to lose half its existing fleet of boats. Months of uncertainty surrounding the role of the police marine unit have ended after a year-long review by the country's police, by the county's police and crime commissioner, Michael Lane. Hampshire Constabulary looked at the unit's operational effectiveness and value for money. Staffing levels will be maintained, but the unit's two biggest vessels, a 12-metre catamaran and an 11-metre patrol launch, will be sold. Two rigid inflatable boats, said to be capable of carrying out all the duties performed by the larger craft, will be retained and are due to be joined by a third. Rumours the Marine Service could be hit by budget cuts or even axed altogether surfaced in January last year.
Taxi driver forced off-road by council rules. A Winchester taxi driver says he's been forced off the road by council bureaucracy. Keith Bottomley, 64, has specialised in serving the city's residential care homes for many years, building up a reputation for reliability. But now he's off the road after his 04 Reg 7-seater Citroen Dispatch, designed for ease of use by elderly passengers, suffered severe damage when hitting a pothole in Andover Road. The damage is so severe that the vehicle has been written off and has since been scrapped. Keith has been told that he must replace it with a vehicle of under 3 years of age, but the cost of more than £30,000 is prohibitive. He says the council rules are too strict. His Citroen was side entry and specially built for disabled people. Keith said he could afford to replace the vehicle with a back-loading one, but the city council says it wouldn't grant it a licence. He said it seems a little bit unfair what's going on. They've changed the rules but never told anyone. I've never been told that if a car is a write-off, you'd have to buy a new one. There is no flexibility. I think I should be able to replace like for like. Now I'm not driving, this has left a lot of customers in the lurch. Keith said the council has a 3-year rule, but that doesn't take into account how well a taxi has been maintained. I enjoy what I do, he said. I drive a lot of disabled people every day and I want to carry on, but I'm up a gum tree and don't know what to do. Keith of Harvey Road, Bishopstoke, has traded as Keith's taxi and been a local driver for more than 25 years. He received a Mayor Community Award in 2016-17. The citation said, unfailingly cheerful and helpful. Keith is reliable and always lets us know if he's delayed. He's flexible and makes time for last-minute changes. In a statement, the council said, "Our licensing team have advised this driver of the standards that all licensed taxi drivers are required to comply with. Drivers have a duty to make themselves familiar with the licensing policy, and we will always support them in the application of this."
Birch car park repairs. Building work to last many weeks is set to start at Winchester City Centre car park. Contractors are to repair the wall at the car park in Upper Brook Street close to Hope Church. The work will mean the temporary loss of around a dozen parking spaces. A City Council statement said, "Following damage to the boundary wall between Upper Brook Street car park and Hope Church, the council which owns the wall will be carrying out the repairs. The repairs are to ensure the structural integrity is maintained. The works will be undertaken by a contractor and are likely to last around 2 months."
Solent Drops presenter Nick Girdler. One of BBC Radio Solent's most popular presenters has been given the push after almost half a century. Nick Girdler's contract has not been renewed in a move which has angered his thousands of fans, who say they have been left saddened and dismayed. The 68-year-old freelancer, who has presented programmes on Solent since 1972, hosted his final show on Sunday. Writing on his Facebook page, he said, "I'm not going because I want to. I'm going because they want me to, much as the BBC say they always listen to the audience. Don't believe everything you hear on the radio. They say they want to encourage a new audience. I think they're just ignoring the one they've already got." Nick said, "I'm on a rolling contract and received an email giving me only 10 days' notice, which was a real bombshell. I've always looked forward to Sundays, and the thing I'll miss most is the listeners, who are stunningly good." Nick, who is chairman of Titchfield Village Trust and a director of the community centre, added, "Something inside me says I've got a lot coming up in the next few years. Titchfield is a very tight-knit community, and I'll get more involved in that side of things." A devoted fan, Margaret Amy, 71, of Shirley, described him as the best presenter Radio Solent has ever had.
Temporary ward stays. Hospital chiefs are seeking approval to continue using a temporary ward for cancer patients. An application has been submitted to Winchester City Council to keep using the 56-bed site at the Royal Hampshire County Hospital. The building is located behind the Butterfield unit and is an extension of the Brinton wing. It's been on site since 2004 and was last given permission in February 2009. The ward has ancillary offices, toilets, waiting and reception rooms and chemotherapy treatment rooms, and is also used for orthopaedic care.
Hospice approved. Winchester planning officers have given approval for a disused building to be converted into a hospice. The Winchester Hospice Appeal is seeking funding for the conversion of Burrell House on Romsey Road. A Victorian house for many years, it was nurses' accommodation, but has been empty for several years. Under delegated powers, the planning officers at the City Council have given permission for the house to be refurbished and for a change of use.
The blood just went everywhere. A Winchester dad has described the horrific moment he was almost killed with a samurai sword and blinded in one eye. Labourer Joe Barnes, 23, was visiting a friend when he was attacked after a row with one of the other people in the house. The sword struck him on the side of his head and face, leaving a long wound which needed more than 40 staples. Police launched an attempted murder inquiry and made a series of arrests, but no one has yet been charged in connection with the near-fatal assault. It happened at a house in Hinesbert Close, Eastleigh, 4 days before Christmas. Mr. Barnes was walking down the stairs when he was struck from behind after seeing his assailant grab a sword from under a bed. "The thing I remember most is the blood, which just went everywhere," he said. "I was dying on the floor. A neighbour came round with a towel and wrapped it around my head If they hadn't done that, I would have died. Mr. Barnes of Winchester spent a month in Southampton General Hospital, including 19 days in a coma, and says he's lucky to be alive. Doctors told him he was a medical miracle, but had to break the devastating news that he'd been left blind in one eye. I put my hand over my other eye and couldn't see a thing, he said. After experiencing weeks of trauma, Mr. Barnes and his partner, Abby Howcroft, finally have something to celebrate, the arrival of their baby daughter, Elise Rose. Her birth was a rare moment of joy for a couple who have endured the worst moments of their lives and know they face difficult days ahead. Mr. Barnes said, I've been left with a huge scar on the side of my head and often feel very tired and depressed. He had no reason to do it, he added. A 17-year-old youth arrested on suspicion of attempted murder has been bailed.
Pride of place in Winchester Centre. Hundreds of people flocked to Winchester as the Hampshire Pride returned. Around 500 people marched through the streets of the city on Saturday to celebrate love and diversity. They gathered at the Great Hall where they were entertained by local bands before the parade started at 2 p.m. Rainbow flags were displayed at many venues across the city and outside the Guildhall. Talking to the Hampshire Chronicle on the day, Gary Whiter, one of the organisers of the Hampshire Pride, said, This is its fifth year. It's a very exciting way to bring the whole community together to celebrate diversity. Just looking around here today and seeing the hundreds of people is a sign that Winchester is a welcoming community that celebrates individuality and creativity, which encourages people to be who they want to be. The route this year took in Jury Street, North Walls, Upper Brook Street and St George's Street, as well as the High Street.
Firefighters rescued a pregnant cow which had collapsed in a field north of Winchester. The pedigree longhorn weighed over half a ton and it took a crew from Winchester around 2.5 hours to get her back on her feet in a field near the Wheatsheaf Hotel at Dummer on Wednesday evening. Crew manager Peter Broomfield from the specialist animal rescue team said it took an age to get her up, but once up she looks pretty good.
Litter collection. City Council officers have said they're disappointed after a busy litter pick at a beauty spot near Winchester. In a tweet on Winchester City Council's account, the neighbourhood services officers say there were litter picking at Compton Lock on Tuesday morning. The rubbish found at the lock included around 50 bottles, 100 cans, dog waste and other items.
Teenager hit with pub beer glass. A man scarred a teenager for life by slashing his face with a beer glass during a pub attack which had no apparent motive. Philip Miles, 27, assaulted the 18-year-old man at the Pitcher and Piano in Colebrook Street, Winchester, on February the 15th, 2018. Miles from Ipswich was found guilty of causing grievous bodily harm following a trial at Winchester Crown Court. The jury was told that Miles attacked the victim until they fell to the floor when he continued to punch him in the face. Dawes staff restrained Miles and he was then arrested. Police staff investigator Michael Longmore said, This was a vicious and unprovoked assault in a busy Winchester bar, which has scarred the victim for life, not just physically but mentally too. I would like to thank the members of the public who came forward following our media appeal and provided vital evidence that helped us to get this violent man behind bars. Miles was given a six-year prison sentence.
Walking Country for Family Charity. Around 50 walkers, with and without dogs, will be taking to the fields and lanes around Old Horsford to raise funds for family support charity Homestart Winchester next month. Nina the Labrador will be returning, along with her owners Mel and Paul Bliss of K-Dog Boarding Kennels near Horsford, who are sponsoring the annual event. Paul said, It is our third year sponsoring the dog walk, and it's always a great opportunity to dust off the cobwebs and enjoy a walk in the spring sunshine. Dogs are not compulsory, he added. You can even come just for the lunch. We are very happy to be supporting Homestart and the work that the charity does with families who are struggling to cope. Added support to the day has come from Tesco Express in Andover Road, Winchester, who are providing a selection of cheeses to go with the ploughman's lunch and which will accompany four homemade soups made by home staff volunteers. The dog walk takes place on Thursday, March the 14th and starts at Pinglestone House, Old Orsod. Arrival is 10:30 a.m. and departure at 10:40 a.m. whatever the weather. There will be two walks of different lengths and there will be a few stalls. A hearty lunch will be ready to welcome the walkers on their return in the 17th century Pinglestone barn, courtesy of Lord and Lady Wakeham. Tickets at £10 can be booked online with a 70 pence booking fee at www.ticketsource.co.uk/homestartwinchesterdistricts or email info@homestartwinchester.org.uk or by calling 01962 851 177. Home Start Winchester supports young families who are struggling with issues like multiple births, disability of a parent or child, mental health problems, homelessness, lone parenting, isolation or unemployment. Families are referred by GPs, health visitors and social workers, and these families are supported either in the home by weekly visitors of trained volunteers or in one of two family groups. The only condition is that there must be one child under the age of five in the family.
Well, thank you very much, everyone. That concludes the Hampshire Chronicle Extracts for this week. Just another reminder that Mary Davis is the person to call if you have any problems with your recording. Her number again, 01962 711 998. Many thanks to our copying, dispatch and memory stick preparation teams and to our editors, Ambrew, Angela Ling, Carol Fraser and Jane Thomas. And, of course, many thanks to our readers, Jane Rutter.
Thank you and goodbye.
John Richards.
Goodbye.
And Margaret Boyden.
Goodbye.
And from me, Pete Lydiard, goodbye. Would you please put the memory stick and the address label in the wallet when you finish with it and return it to us as soon as possible. The address label will ensure that it is returned to us at our new address in Wanston. Thank you.